Welcome to the Cash Considerations Podcast, Chicago Bulls podcast. I'm Ricky O'Donnell. I'm joined by Jason Pat. Jason, breaking news from Bulls land. The Bulls just put up 124 points, the most they've scored in a regulation home game since February 21st, 2016 against the Lakers. It's a pretty big deal, right, Jace?
Totally. I mean, the offense is really killing it tonight. Antonio Blakeney at 21 points. Zach LaVine over 20 points again. I mean, they're really great. Oh, what's that? They gave up 149, and they lost by 25. And Klay Thompson hit a record, NBA record 14 three-pointers. So,
play my music.
What can you say about that?
Only the Bulls.
Only the Bulls.
Who can set the court on fire? Klay
set the court on fire tonight.
Yes, he did.
So I have to admit, we got to start this off. I didn't see this game because I play basketball every Monday night. But I'm mad I didn't see it because this sounds insane. What happened, Jason?
It was honestly a lot of fun. I tweeted like towards the end of the first half that it was kind of like just like a religious experience watching this thing because the Warriors came out and, like I said, mentioned Klay Thompson had like 50, I believe it was 52 points in like three quarters in 27 minutes. He took 24 threes, made an NBA record 14. And this is after Klay had been infamously in a huge slump. People are talking about his new beard and that blame the beard and all that kind of stuff. And they've been feeding him, and they came out and were feeding him early. He had six threes in the first quarter, 22 points. You could just tell right away that it was going to be a Klay game, that the Bulls are about to get their ass kicked, which after the game was over, that's basically what Fred Hoiberg said. He answered a question. He's like, well, Sam, I'm assuming that meant Sam Smith, we just got our ass kicked tonight or something of that nature. And yeah, just from the very beginning, the Warriors were getting easy shots all over the place. Klay was on fire. Steph was on fire. Steph had 23 in the first half. They combined for like, I think Klay had 36 in the first half. Steph had 23. Warriors had 92 points in the first half. That is the second most points ever in a first half in NBA history. 92 points. They only ended up with 149 because their scrubs couldn't do anything in the fourth quarter. They hit 24 threes total. That was one shy of the prior NBA record. They hit zero threes in the fourth quarter. So they had 24 threes through three quarters, but they weren't able to break the record because, like I said, their scrubs kind of stunk it up. But it was just a wild, wild shooting display. And that Steph and Klay were great. We also saw Alphonso McKinney, Chicago product, come off the bench, scored 19 points and hit four threes. Jonas Jerebko hit like a 30-footer, one-legged at the end of the shot clock. It was just that kind of night. The Warriors just completely outclassed the Bulls team that is hurting. I mean, I honestly actually thought before the game that maybe the Bulls would keep it kind of close and then lose by 10 to 15. The Warriors were on the end of a road trip, end of a three-game road trip. It's back-to-back, but it was just a beatdown right from the start. Just an absolute shellacking. One of the best offensive performances I've ever seen in a half by the Warriors. It was a lot of fun to watch, so you should be sorry that you missed it because as shitty as the Bulls' defense were, it was just kind of awesome to watch the Warriors just kind of clown them and toy with them for three quarters.
This was the Warriors' third game in four nights. They played last night, as you said. Klay entered this game shooting 13% from three-point range.
He had made five threes before this game in whatever, seven games. He hit it like five or six threes, something like that. And he hit six in the first quarter and then wound up with 14. And in the third quarter, Steph Curry had the previous record with 13 three-pointers. The third quarter, the entire third quarter was basically the Warriors and Steph almost specifically trying to get Klay the record. They were just every possession down. They were hunting threes. So Steph was trying to set him up, or Steph was trying to set a screen to get Klay open. Like that's one of the great things about Steph is like he's such an unselfish player, and why he makes them just so unbeatable. Obviously, he's greatest shooter of all time, but such an unselfish player, always willing to move aside for other players like Klay and like KD to do their thing, and then obviously he does his own thing as well. But like the whole third quarter, Warriors just running plays for Klay, pushing the ball, getting Klay wide open three-pointers after wide open three-pointers. And the Bulls defense could do nothing to stop it. They were just had no answer. guys were wide open. Neil and Stacey were mad about it, and they should be, because it was quite frankly embarrassing. As good as the Warriors were, like, the Bulls were just nowhere near these guys on all these shots, just wide open shots for wide open shots. At one point, Klay got like smacked in the face, or I think he hit Damian Jones. I think they collided. Klay was bleeding out of his forehead, still getting wide open, hitting threes. Then he had to put a headband on to cover the blood. Missed a couple three. He missed like three threes in a row at one point, all wide open. And then he finally hit. I think he needed one or two more, and he finally got the record. But it was wild. It was both an incredible offensive showing by the Warriors, an embarrassing, pathetic showing by the Bulls. Which, like, I don't want to be too like upset at the Bulls when they're that outmanned, but just like the effort just was absolutely awful. And that's been part of a theme. Like, we've seen some games where they've been competitive. They've won a couple games. We'll talk about that a little later, but they've had these games already where they gave up 135 to the Hornets the other night, 149 a night. They dropped to like 28th or 29th in defensive rating. Their defense is real bad. And when you play a team like the Warriors who can exploit that with ball movement and passing and shooting, like, it's real ugly.
I remember when the Bulls played the Warriors last year, they gave up 143. That was nothing compared to tonight. The Warriors might have only scored a few more points with 149. This just seems like a game where, if they wanted to, do you think the Warriors could have dropped 200?
I don't know. Like, I don't know if they would have gotten to 200, because like, they scored 92 and basically was like a perfect first half. But I easily could have gotten. I think the record in regulation is something like 170 some points. If they actually would have played, like, obviously they weren't going to play their stars in the fourth quarter. If they actually tried, I think they might have been able to break the NBA record for points in a regulation game. Like I said, 200 is really tough.
It's only 173, and it's hilarious because I saw someone on Twitter, Dieter Kirkenbach, say this 3 days ago. He tweeted out, the NBA record for most points scored in a regulation game is 173. Will the Warriors beat that when they play the Bulls in Chicago on Monday? I mean, that's just clairvoyant right there when they're dropping to 92 and a half to start things off.
92 points and a half is like impossible to fathom. I mean, there's been some big scoring around the league this year with teams jacking threes, pushing past like this, but like 92 points and a half is absolutely fucking wild. And it was incredible to see. Like, I'm not even mad. Like I said, the Bulls were awful tonight. They get absolutely embarrassed, but I wasn't even mad. It was just that fun to watch the Warriors just toy with them and beat the shit out of them. It was just kind of fun.
The last thing I saw before I left to play ball myself was a tweet from C Red Fred, who said, with a victory tonight, the Bulls will move into a tie for the eighth seed in a possible playoff showdown with the Bucks and Raptors. Learned men and women will talk for decades about this evening if we can somehow overcome the absence of four of our top seven players to achieve greatness. That was C-Rad Fred at the onset of Bulls Warriors. I don't think it worked out very well.
Did not work out well. And even I got clowned a bit because, I thought maybe the Bulls would be able to keep it close, keep it semi-competitive for like a half, and then the Warriors would do one of their patented third quarters and basically put it out of reach then. But this game was over after one quarter, and that was that. And then from there, it was just basically a clown show and a Warriors running a practice, and it was a lot of fun to watch.
It's kind of cute that Hoiberg even, like, pretended to get mad. Hoiberg's been salty all year. I want to say I kind of love salty Fred Hoiberg. I feel like he knows that he's probably not in this for the long haul. It is hard to fire him when you think about all the injuries the Bulls had this season. Like, we talked about this on a previous episode of the podcast, that I didn't expect Hoiberg to make it through the season. I thought he'd get fired before the All-Star break, just the sense I get following the team. And, you know, the way Fred has talked this year is decidedly different, I think, than his first three seasons in control. With that being said, I mean, when they're down Dunn, Markkanen, Valentine, I mean, it's just injury after injury. It's tough to blame this on Hoiberg. I do think it's funny that now he's trying to be the tough guy coach after being such like a player-friendly coach his first few years. But he knows there wasn't
He's finally listening to Jimmy Butler's advice and coaching harder.
Coaching harder.
A couple years too late.
Just what a ridiculous game, though. Do you have anything else to say on this?
Like, just on the point of Fred, like, so we did kind of talk about this before, but like, I think he'll be safer a bit unless like they consistently lose games like this, and especially at home. Like, they got a really tough week coming up. They got the Nuggets next on Wednesday. The Nuggets are very good. They play, I think, the Rockets after that. We'll see if James Harden is back. I think they have another game against the Pacers coming up, and then they have a couple of these games, and the schedule gets really tough again. So, like, I think if they stay competitive, even if they're losing a lot, which, I mean, you can't expect really anything else when you're losing or when you're missing that many guys. But if they're getting their ass beat on the regular, that's when I think there might be some questions about Fred maybe not making it past, like, Christmas, like I said, which we kind of talked about before. So I guess we'll see. Like, if they have more games like this where they're giving up, like, 80-point halves and losing by 20. Like I said, they lost by 30 in Charlotte the other night, gave up 135. So, like, they I don't know how many more losses like that Fred can afford, but I think they will probably be pretty lenient because of these injuries. But, like I said, with this tough schedule coming up, they're going to have to compete a little more.
And Hoiberg knew this was coming, too. My friend Madeline Kenny from the Sun-Times tweeted this pregame, asked how nice it is to have four consecutive home games, Bulls coach Fred Hoiberg said. It's not nice at all. We play Golden State, Denver, Indiana, and Houston. Yeah. I don't like it. It's just a noticeable difference from the way Hoiberg's speaking to the media this year than he has the last few years. My heart goes out to him a little bit because there is not a coach in the world. There's not a coach in the history of basketball that could salvage this damn mess right now, especially not against a team like the Warriors who are just locked in at a historic rate tonight. Silly. Straight up Silly game, it looks like.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, you could blame them for, like, the defense and then the not showing heart, which I think some people probably will, which is kind of fair. But, yeah, it's overall when you're missing, like I said, four of your top, like, whatever, eight guys maybe. It's tough. You would like to see a little more effort there. They have shown some better efforts in previous games. Is that they do have two wins. They're not like Owens. They're not like the Cavs. The Cavs have already fired their coach because they're 0-6 and even worse than the Bulls. So the Bulls haven't been quite that bad because they've actually been able to get in the W column. But yeah, just some of these games, and especially tonight, just absolutely terrible. But
yeah, I was gonna say there's five teams right now with less wins than the Bulls sitting at 2-5. And there's also a few other teams with two wins. So the Bulls, for, you know, as hopeless and as bad as they are, you kind of need to be worse, Bulls. And I wonder how that's going to play out as the season continues, when Markkanen comes back, you know, when they get everyone healthy. It's like you would expect them to be competitive and win some games, especially against some of these bottom feeder teams. Yeah.
Some of these other teams are, I mean, like I said, we mentioned the Cavs. They're obviously awful. The Knicks are really bad. The Nets are competitive, but they're probably end up losing a lot as well. The Hawks, who the Bulls beat the other night, we'll talk about that game a little bit. The Bulls won on the road in a second of a back-to-back, the old Sega Baba, and won by 12 because the Hawks are absolutely awful. The Hawks shot like 30, low 30% against the Bulls defense, which you should be like relegated if you do that. And like the Suns are terrible. There's a couple teams that are probably pretty good that have bad records right now. Like the Thunder and Rockets are both 1-4. The Lakers are dropped to 2-5, which is hilarious. And then the Wizards are actually probably the funniest of the bunch at 1-5, just a complete shit show. You would think that they'll be a little better at some point, but yeah,
I mean, they're like, the Wizards at the end of the day.
Yeah,
I mean, this is the Wizards, always the Wizards.
Yeah, this is classic Wizards. Hashtag so Wizards there, Chuck. But yeah, I mean, ultimately, like I said, with these guys missing all this time and with the schedule that's coming up, you would think the Bulls will lose a lot of games and fall pretty low in the standings and out of the race. But yeah, later in the year, if these guys come back and play healthy, like I said, I think they'll hopefully at least be a little interesting and not just completely in an ugly ass tank.
Draft pick. So it's like it's a lose-lose scenario right now. They're going to start themselves off in a huge hole.
Kind of like last year.
What's up?
Kind of like last year when they started.
Yeah, last year they were 3-20 until Mirotić comes back. You know, you just hope it's not the same scenario, because the best thing for the long-term health of the franchise would be, you know, a straight tank, being able to get a top four draft pick. Obviously, you want to see the young guys develop. Like, we're not technically even, like, rooting for them to lose. We want to see Lauri Markkanen out there. We want to see him build off his strong rookie season. We want to see if, you know, Chris Dunn, is he going to be a long-term fit for this team with his contract expiring after this year? There's a lot we still need to see from the Bulls, but the fact of the matter is that here's how they won their two games this year. In the first one, Cam Payne hit 7 threes.
Now, let's get off this Warriors game. Let's talk about the Cam Payne game.
I would love to talk about the Cam Payne game. I'm taking this personally because right before this game, I said Cameron Payne was maybe the worst NBA player I've ever seen. I challenged our listeners to tweet at us who is a worse NBA player? And Cam Payne responds by draining 7 threes. They were all in the second half.
All second half. I think they were. He hit 6 in a row at one point. So like he went like Klay Thompson, Steph Curry on him, 6 in a row, and then he hit one last one, a huge one in the fourth quarter after he like missed a floater in the lane, got his own rebound, and then just pulled up from three. It was like a wild confidence. So that was a shot that Steph Curry would take. And he made it. He was just unconscious. I mean, good for fucking Cam Payne for shutting some of the doubters. And even like to come back to tonight's game, Cam Payne actually had a decent stat line tonight's game. Obviously, the Bulls got their ass beat, but he had like 15 points, 5 of 9 shooting. He's had a couple really besides the Cam Payne game where he had 7 threes. He's had a couple other nice scoring games. So at least he's showing that he can be semi competent. He's obviously not really much of a defender and streaky shooter, but at least he's not, like you said, worst NBA player ever. Not even worst player in the league now. Like, he's showing that he could at least possibly be like a competent backup point guard. So shouts to Cam Payne for shutting us up and making us look like the dumb idiots that we are.
Yeah, don't throw yourself into this, Jason. This is about me. This is about me being a dumb idiot.
I mean, I called Cam Payne like the worst player in the year last year, 2 years ago, when the Bulls first got him. I was pretty adamant that he was like worst player in the league. Bet I was not as far as you in terms of like worst player ever, but like I've been on the very harsh ripping on Cam Payne thing because he has been absolutely terrible. And now last year he showed some flashes, and this year he's doing the same thing. So like at least he's doing a little something and not completely useless.
Do you have any like actual takeaways from these two wins they got earlier earlier in the last week?
Besides Payne and the Hornets game, like Zach LaVine was awesome again. Like, he's consistently been just really good offensively. Took over down the stretch. I think this was right after that Dallas game where he was complaining about play calls and stuff. And then like in the Hornets game, he was basically doing everything. Like, campaign at the 1-3, but the rest was basically LaVine doing his thing offensively, and it worked. He had huge shots. He hit the game-winning free throws with 0.5 seconds left. He had the big defensive play to set up those free throws by knocking the ball off Kemba Walker's hand on the inbound play. So, I mean, it was basically a Zach LaVine takeover, and then with plus the campaign game, winning the Hornets game. The Hornets were kind of a mess that game. They shot really poorly. Kemba Walker shot poorly. I think they shot like 28% from three. So that was, I wouldn't want to say a fluky win, because I think the Bulls did outplay them soundly for most of the game, but they did pull it out in the end. The Hornets came back from an 11-point deficit and ended up going up by 5 at one point. I just figured that, oh, this is the game. Bulls are going to fall apart, kind of like they did in Dallas. But LaVine stepped up, Payne stepped up, and they ended up winning. So good for them for grabbing that win. I thought they deserved that game. They played a little harder down the stretch. I did not watch the Hawks game at all. I was out doing other stuff and I had no interest in Bulls, Hawks, October basketball.
I watched that game. I wasn't paying total attention to it. I haven't rewatched it. Most of these games I've been rewatching and, you know, making clips and notes and all that. But I just watched the Hawks game live. I will say, I thought Jabari looked pretty good that game. That was the best he's looked on the Bulls, his final line. 18 points, 8 rebounds, 3 assists, a steal, 2 blocks, 7-16 shooting, goes 3-6 from 3-point range. I mean, that's what you want from Jabari, is, you know, not over dribbling the ball, not constantly settling for long twos. He finally got in a rhythm from 3-point range. That was actually a great Ryan Arcidiacono game too.
If we were looking for takeaways, like, he's been an NBA player at least. Talk about more of that, because I didn't watch it. I just saw the stat line, though. He had, like, a career high in points.
Yeah, so he had 13 points, 5 of 10 from the field, 3 of 6 from deep, 7 assists. He had a quote after the game, I don't have it in front of me right now, that was basically like, you know I haven't established myself in this league, so, you know, people might not respect me as a shooter, but I know I can shoot. So when I'm open, I'm going to let it go. That's the right attitude to have. If you notice in that game as well, Trae Young, only 13 points on 3 of 12 shooting from the field. Didn't make a 3. Obviously, the Hawks were just ice cold that entire game. But I thought Arcidiacono played a pretty solid two-way game. Now, like, is he a keeper or anything like that? I don't really think so. No, but
he's eminently replaceable. I didn't even think he was an NBA player last year. I thought it was kind of a joke. Just like this gritty, you could make the jokes about the gritty little white point guard who tries hard. And, like, that's he's basically just an end of bench guy, but he's like, he's been all right. Like I said, he's had a few really nice games. Didn't do anything against the Warriors tonight, but I mean, you're not going to expect the dude to come out and kill it against the Warriors. So, like, he's at least proving that he can have a spot at the end of a bench and give you decent minutes and play really hard.
Yeah, and you know, when we're searching for positives, the fact that we have to go all the way down to Ryan Arcidiacono, that's pretty trash. But you know, this is the season, and it's not going to change. I mean, it will get more interesting, obviously, when the guys get healthy. But even on nights when the opponent isn't hitting 24 threes and they're not scoring 92 points in the first half, this is going to be a long damn bull season, Jason. I don't know why we signed up for this.
I know. Hold on. Let's, if we want to talk about other maybe more obscure bench players, we got big Cristiano Felicio back in the rotation. Ooh, now.
Good this year.
Yeah, he's looked all right. He's, I mean, Rolo has basically been he looks like a corpse out there, and Chris has at least been playing hard. He's after last year, after he got his contract last summer, and then was one of the worst players in the league last year. I was looking this up for another article I was writing for Forbes. His like net rating was on-court net rating in like almost 1,000 minutes was like minus 17 or like 18 points per 100 possessions, which was the worst in the league among like rotation players. And he's come out now. He's playing hard, showing some energy. He rim runs, he rebounds. He's still not super athletic. He's kind of slow, awkward, and all that kind of stuff. But he's at least playing hard. He's playing better than Lopez. Lopez is like Robin Lopez's best like attributes at this point are like doing fun stuff on social media and wearing like funny t-shirts.
Yeah, that's pretty cool though.
Yeah, that Rolo's an awesome dude. Great guy to have around, but he really just shouldn't be playing at this point. They should probably try to look.
What happened? He just totally fell off. I mean, he was a pretty good player even coming into this year.
Yeah, I don't know if it's like, just like the lesser.
That's a guy minutes. Where like.
Or just the league, with the pace and all that kind of stuff. Yeah, it's exactly. And I know he's been getting into foul trouble with some of the new emphasis, the rules emphasis with like some of the off ball, the freedom of movement, or whatever they call it. He's picked up some ticky tack fouls doing that kind of stuff. He just looks slow. And I mean, he's not that old. I think he's what 30, 31. But just with the way the league is going, it's his type of player, like is just kind of being phased out. Just the big lumbering. The lumbering big man who can't really stretch the floor that much, he just looks slow out there. So I mean, I'd rather have the young guys, have Felicio, have Wendell Carter Jr. playing more minutes, and it's just kind of the way it is at this point.
Yeah, I mean, this is just a league-wide trend, and I'm going to be fascinated to see if it's sustainable. That you know these teams are dropping 140s regularly. We've seen it, you know, throughout the early start of the year. But Rolo was a guy, even you know. Coming into this year, before we knew this offensive explosion would happen, he was someone who couldn't afford to lose even half a step, right? And he's getting to the age now, I think, what is he, like 30 years old, where, you know, the athleticism might start to decline a little bit, and his athleticism was always hanging on by a thread. He is 30. So now that he's lost that half a step or whatever it is, I mean, they might as well be putting Felicio out there. Yeah. I don't have, you know, the updated stats in front of me after the Warriors game, but Felicio was leading the team in plus-minus for a while.
He was Hawks game. He was only minus 5 today, so that's not too bad. I think it might be Blakeney now. Blakeney was a plus 10 tonight. He was stat padding like crazy. Blakeney was like doing his best to try to do the backdoor cover. But yeah, Felicio before tonight was like a plus. I think I looked at it was like plus 12 or 13 per 100 possessions. It obviously came down a bit tonight. But yeah, he's been pretty effective. So if he's gonna do that, if he's gonna be competent big man, I'd rather give the minutes to your young big man who's under contract for two more years after this one at $8 million a year. So hopefully that was that. It's looked like that contract was a complete disaster last year. If you can at least be competent, that makes the contract look a little better.
Yeah, I think so. If you look at the Hawks game when they won, Felicio played 26 minutes and was like plus 20, team yeah. high. Yeah. LaVine was only plus 5 in that game. Wendell Carter was minus 8. They did. They went on all their runs with Felicio in the game, plus 20. It's like the other thing about Felicio is at least he has a role in the NBA, which is it's just like a rim runner, right? Yeah. Someone who's going to set a screen, dive to the basket. He's still pretty light on his feet. He's still pretty explosive. What is he, like 26 now, 25 or 26?
26.
Ooh, Felicio and I have the same birthday. July 7th, 1992 for Felicio. I was not born in 1992. He's a little bit younger than me, but... that's exciting. So yeah, they might as well just go with Felicio at this point.
Him and Wendell, and it was kind of fun coming back to the Warriors game for a second. Wendell wound up with 18 points, 7 rebounds, 4 assists, and he missed both his 3-pointers, but he did take instead of hesitating. I feel like that's been a problem a bit to start the year, where he's passing up open 3-pointers. He said he missed both of them today, but he at least took them, which I think is a good sign. He had a few other decent, as bad as the Bulls' defense was, he had one play where he stuck with Curry on a switch in isolation and stuck with him, and I can't remember what Curry did, but he definitely did not score. So he had a few other nice baskets around the rim because he's kind of struggled offensively, which is not a surprise for a young big man. And a lot of his points came when the game was out of reach, but still, rack up some nice assists or a nice stats, get a little confidence, as Stacey likes to say. That was nice to see. And he did also poster Jordan Bell, the name of our podcast, Cash Considerations, the Jordan Bell thing. So he did do that. So that was like one of the few highlights from the game.
That was tonight?
Oh, yeah. He postered Jordan Bell.
Damn, I got to see that.
Yeah. I mean, it wasn't like an incredible poster, but he dunked on him, and I believe he was fouled. So it was a nice dunk.
I was a little disappointed looking at the box score that Jordan Bell only had 3 points in 18 minutes. When they started him just as a total fuck you move to the Bulls last year, that was amazing. He comes out of the starting lineup introductions doing the cash considerations sign and then asks after the game, how's cash considerations doing? So, unfortunately, the Jordan Bell trolling has been toned down a little bit this year, but I'm still hopeful, personally, that he can bring it back at some point.
He did have 3 blocks, and I think he had a really nice block of Levine at one point. He was a minus 15. That's the Warriors, like the fourth quarter, was their whole bench unit, and it was really bad. That was when Blakeney and Parker and Jabari Parker were chucking and getting buckets. And also Shaq Harrison, also getting buckets in the fourth quarter. He had 13 points, 5 of 8 shooting. 18 minutes, a lot of that coming in the fourth when the Bulls were just lighting it up and the Warriors scrubs were stinking it up. But yeah.
Yeah, so the Bulls' upcoming schedule here, guess what? It's not going to get any easier, as Hoiberg alluded to earlier. They've got Denver on Wednesday on Halloween. I'm going to go to that dressed up as the scariest costume I could possibly think of, a Chicago Bulls fan. Then on Friday, November 2nd, they got Indiana at home. Houston at home, and then next Monday they start a little just 2-game mini road trip at New York against the Knicks and then at the Pelicans. That'll be a fun one with Mirotić, you know, killing it this year with Etuan around. So you know, you just look at this schedule and it's just not going to get any easier. They beat the Knicks, maybe, like, that could be a win, but this thing is, if they beat Denver, Indiana, or Houston, I mean, that would be a shock.
Yeah, Denver moved to 5-1. They've been playing really good, playing solid defense. Nikola Jokic, obviously one of the best big men in the league. Stud.
I can't wait to watch him live. I haven't seen him live before.
Stud. Former legendary, former Bull Gary Harris has become an excellent player.
Bulls legend Gary Harris.
Bulls will never live that down as long as we live that trade of Gary Harris and Jusuf Nurkic for Doug McDermott, one of the downfalls of, I guess you could call it, the Jimmy Butler era, the Tibbs era, whatever you want to call it. But that trade was a disaster. Gary Harris is an awesome player now. Jamal Murray is a lot of fun. Paul Millsap has been solid for so long. Yeah, so the Nuggets look like one of the up and coming teams in the West. After that, like you mentioned, the Pacers are really good. They lost tonight to Portland. They're off to an okay start, 4-3, but Victor Oladipo is great. They just have a really solid team. The Rockets one will be, I guess, possibly interesting depending on if James Harden plays. The Rockets have been kind of a hot mess so far, which I guess the fact that they brought in Melo and Michael Carter-Williams, what were they asking for? Like I said, Michael Carter-Williams, I think I've mentioned this before, probably my least favorite Bull of all time, and Melo is completely washed, and their defense has taken a huge step back, not surprisingly. And Harden has been dealing with a hamstring injury. I know they said he probably will be out through Friday, so then maybe he comes back for Saturday's game against the Bulls. You would think even if they don't have Harden, they have Chris Paul, Eric Gordon, Clint Capela, you'd think they would still be able to come in and beat the Bulls, but I guess you never know the way they've been playing. It hasn't been very good. But yeah, either way, it definitely would be a surprise for the Bulls to win any of these upcoming 3 games. But hopefully, since they're all at home, if they're not going to win, and like I said, it would probably be better for them to lose these games anyways, given for draft position. But I would just like to at least see them be competitive for this. Just, I want to see effort, play close games, see some development from Levine and some of these other guys. And then if they end up losing close games, totally fine with that.
On a personal level, a week from Tuesday, I'm going to Indianapolis for the Champions Classic. Going to watch Duke versus Kentucky there, and then Kansas versus Michigan State. So that's going to be
there. You go. Do some scouting.
Yeah, hell yeah! I go into that every year. It's always awesome. And this year is going to be ridiculous to see that Duke team live in person. So hopefully, I'll be able to come back with full reports on Cam Reddish, RJ Barrett, Zion Williamson, all those guys. Kansas has got a good prospect too, Quentin Grimes, who could be, you know, an option for the Bulls if they're not in the top five, if they're in sort of that 5 to 10 range or whatever, and they miss out on all the stud wings. Quentin Grimes could be a pretty damn good player too. So personally, I'm excited for college hoops to start up. That's, you know, that starts next week. You can keep it locked to SB Nation for all of our preview coverage. We got a ton of stuff dropping in the next few days. And yeah, I mean, you know, during this stretch of Bulls basketball where Portis is out, Markkanen's out, everyone out, done, it's never too early to talk about the tank. That's what it feels like to me right now, at least.
Yeah, I mean, we talked about it a bit before on our last pod, and then they, of course, go out and win a couple games. But yes, after a game like tonight and with the games coming up, definitely never too early to think about those Duke dudes and all the, and the other guys at the top, and think about losing games. It's so lovely.
All right. Well, I mean, I have nothing else to say on this. Do you?
I guess we could briefly talk about the Portis injury. Obviously, that happened last week in the game against the Hornets. We haven't really mentioned that much. It was basically the same injury as the Chris Dunn injury, yeah. The other knee, and it's kind of, that's awful for Portis. He didn't get his extension this offseason, so now he's going to be out 4 to 6 weeks. It's a real bummer. I'm curious, are you a fan of Hoiberg going with Chandler Hutchison as the starting, I guess, power forward, and then keeping Jabari off the bench? Do you think they're going to change that up at any point? Because Jabari's been playing at least a little better, at least finding a bit more of a groove. I know Fred likes him in that point forward role off the bench, and he has found a bit of a groove doing that, but I do wonder if Hutchison just really hasn't done much of anything in the starting lineup. He's played some decent defense at least at some points, but just in terms of like an offensive threat, he's a complete zero. I guess maybe they just keep him out there for the defense because they need some type of defensive presence, but he's not really a power forward. He's really skinny. He's obviously not – he's 6'7", 6'8", skinny, not that strong. So I'm curious to see if they do keep the rookie in the starting lineup with Portis out.
Yeah, I would love to hear Hoiberg talk about Jabari unfiltered. Like, when he doesn't have a microphone in his face and he can just say whatever he wants, because benching him in the fourth preseason game was just such an audacious move. And to me, that was like Hoiberg just taking control of the team and just no longer really caring about, you know, how strong his relationship with his boss is, because his boss has signed Jabari to play small forward, of course, to be the starting small forward for this team. So Hoiberg making that move was a big deal, and I think it speaks volumes of what he thinks about Parker as a player. With that being said, I mean, Parker has been filling it up a little bit lately, at least offensively. We know he has a much higher offensive ceiling than Hutchison does. I think at a certain point, the Bulls are going to have nothing to lose, and they might as well just put Parker in there. But then the question is, you know, when these guys get healthy, do you move Parker back to the bench? I think that's the reason why he went with Hutchison, because he doesn't want Jabari thinking he's going to be a starter. Long-term, Jabari is going to be a bench guy for this season. So that's the reality of the situation.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. Like I said, and the fact that he's gotten a bit comfortable in this role is probably a reason to also do it, so he's just not getting jerked back and forth. He's still playing big minutes. Let me see. Because he played, I think, 20-some minutes. Not that tonight matters. He had 26 minutes tonight, but against the Hawks, he played 34 minutes. Against the Hornets, he played 26, 31 in the Hornets win. So, like, he's still playing 27 minutes a game. So, it's not like the starting versus bench thing is even, like, really affecting his minutes that much. He's still playing plenty. So, you might as well just, I guess, keep it, unless you're just getting beat so bad to start games that you just have to basically make a change at some point. Maybe he does it then. But, like, right now, Jabari's offense is decent enough. His defense is obviously going to be just – it is what it is. But hopefully he just keeps hitting shots. And he had 6 assists tonight. He's been showing off some decent passing as well. So, I mean, Jabari just kind of is what he is. He's gonna get buckets at times. There'll be other times where he's going to make you want to pull your hair out with shot selection and awful defense. Obviously,
I just don't know if he'll be anything much more than that, but he'll get his numbers, and I guess that's basically that.
You know, his numbers on the season through the first six games actually don't look that bad. Averaging 16 points in 27 minutes, shooting 46% from the floor, 43% on nearly four attempts per game from three-point range, 80%
throws. Yeah, down a little bit now because he missed all three-pointers today. But, yeah, coming into the game, it was solid. I mean, he's just kind of been like that his whole career. I mean, even last year, like, Bucks fans complained about him all year last year. And then you look at his numbers, his base numbers are fine, like 13 points, 5 rebounds, 48% shooting, 38% from three. They look fine. I think it's just the overall package with him just hasn't really translated to winning, like, impact basketball. So I'm not surprised that he's getting his numbers. And he does some really nice things on the court with his offense, but just overall, just in terms of, like, two-way play and just overall impact and winning, it's just against good teams, it's just not there. And we've kind of seen that this year. Like, when the games have, like, mattered against, like, quality competition, he's obviously not – just has not been what you need. But none of these guys really are besides Zach for the most part.
Yeah. And, you know, we're going to have a lot of time to talk about Zach LaVine throughout the year on the rest of this podcast because that is really the one bright light we have going for us right now. But I think that about wraps it up.
Yep.
For Jason, I'm Ricky. This has been the Cash Considerations Podcast, the Chicago Bulls podcast. Thanks for listening. Later.
All right.